Jamie Marks Kors, Chris Ranji on KMOX, and it is hour number two, and we are very excited that for the next, for the foreseeable future, every Monday at 11 o'clock, we are going to have a few moments to speak with Chris Cillizza, political commentator and author of the daily newsletter, So What? You have seen him on CNN, writer for the Washington Post. You've seen him everywhere. We know you've seen Chris Cillizza, and now you get to hear him every Monday at 11 o'clock right here on KMOX, and he joins us now. How's it going, Chris?
I was told this will be a weekly St. Louis Cardinals segment. Yes. I assume that that's correct.
Well, we can start there if you want.
MLB Insider.
I am good. Thank you for asking. And thank you guys for doing this. I love it. This is my wife's, St. Louis is my wife's hometown, so I am thrilled to do it.
I don't know why I 100% thought you were going to say this is my wife's favorite show. I was like, thank you.
I haven't asked her favorite St. Louis-based radio show, so it's not. We can't rule out that it's her favorite show.
That's right. That's a great point.
If it's not, we're going to have problems.
Exactly.
So, Chris, it's been an interesting 7 days, I would say, at the very least, since President Trump reassumed office. Just your general take on the way the first week of his new presidency and how it's gone.
So, yeah, I mean, unsurprising in that he's doing a lot of the things he said he would do on the campaign trail. But I will say surprising, at least to me, in the efficiency with which the Trump White House has moved. The obvious comparison we have is to 2017. And on January 27, 2017, I covered that White House. The Trump White House was sort of trying to still figure out where the bathrooms were in the White House. You know, I mean, there was not a ton of organization. They were kind of still trying to figure it out. Most notably, Donald Trump was trying to still figure it out. That is not the case this time around. They had a very clear plan. I think they expected to win, unlike in 2016. And they are executing it, and they are doing, I'll note, a lot of the things that I think are the most politically fraught and legally fraught, birthright citizenship, pardoning January 6th defendants. They're doing that right at the start, sort of get it out of the way, and that is on purpose.
There's a lot to ask you about, but I do want to hit the pardons really quickly. Mm-hmm. The January 6th pardons, obviously, even Lindsey Graham was condemning some of the pardons for those January 6th, the people who stormed the Capitol. But I also want to add in some of Biden's pardons in his last day of the presidency, pardoning whole groups of people like allegedly nonviolent drug offenders when we know not all of those people were vetted. One, in fact, was condemned by the Senator Blumenthal out of Connecticut because it was a drug lord who murdered an 8-year-old boy and his mother to stop them from testifying, which actually was such a horrific crime. It changed Connecticut's witness protection laws. So that was a horrible one. Another one was a drug lord who poured boiling water on people. So obviously Biden was pardoning people that he didn't know what their crimes were. And all of that to say, those pardons plus the January 6th pardons, do we need to revisit or even eliminate the president's pardon power?
Man, it certainly feels like that, doesn't it? I mean, like, it just, I always say, you know, Democrats will say, well, look at what Trump did with the pardons. And Republicans will say, well, look what Biden did with the pardons. And I say, like, we should figure out a way that presidents don't have this power. Here's the problem. It's in the Constitution, and it's really, really hard to change the Constitution. I always remind people this. To amend the Constitution, you need a two-thirds vote in both the U.S. House and the Senate, and then if that happens, three out of four state legislatures in this country, 75% of the states, would need to then approve whatever had been approved by Congress. It's just such a high bar. Understandably, but I don't think the founding fathers thought this is what it should be. Sort of blanket pardons. I'll note, you didn't even mention it, but preemptive pardons by Joe Biden. You know, pardoning his son Hunter for any crime that may have been committed in a 10-year period, pardoning his two brothers and his sister preemptively. And then the Trump stuff. Look, to my mind, I think you could There are about 1,500, a little more than 1,500 people arrested on January 6, 2021. About 1,000 of them were charged with misdemeanors, trespassing, that sort of thing. I understand. You want those people, they've either served, they've been convicted. You want to pardon them. I'm not saying I support it, but I understand it. But there were 500 people who were convicted of violent crimes, including assaulting police officers. To pardon them or commute their sentences, including people like the head of the Proud Boys, you know, a white nationalist organization, Enrique Tarrio, who was in jail for 22 years. He had served 3 years of it. That seems to me to go directly counter to Donald Trump's sort of focus on the rule of law and backing the blue. So I don't think anybody, Democrat or Republican president, comes out looking even close to good in this situation.
Chris Saliza is with us here on KMOX. And aside from the pardons, there have been a number of executive orders that have happened. In fact, on the first day, there was a flurry of them, just a ton of executive orders. Just looking at them, generally speaking, do you feel like some of them make sense? Are there those that you don't really care for? How do you feel about them?
So just to your point, Trump signed 26 executive orders in his first day. And remember, he wasn't president until 12:01 p.m. on that day, right? So he only had 12 hours. He signed 26 executive orders on that day. By contrast, Donald Trump in January 20th, 2017 signed one executive order. So there was clearly a focus on this. I mean, the one that stands out to me and the one I think is most likely to be overturned, and probably the one that Donald Trump is doing more to score points with his political base than he actually thinks this is going to happen, is on birthright citizenship. Essentially saying, just because you were born in this country, if one or both of your parents were illegal, then you may not be a citizen of the U.S. Again, this is back to the Constitution. This is in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, that if you are born in the United States, you are a citizen. I think that's going to not withstand legal scrutiny. 22 states, last time I checked, it may have gone up, but 22 states had filed appeals to it. And, you know, I think that may be more of a messaging move than an actual Donald Trump thinks it's going to happen move. Because, again, what did he run on? Tough on immigration. We need to do better than what we've been doing. We need to make some hard choices. And I guess he views that as one. In terms of being surprised, that was, I guess, the one that I was the most surprised at.
Yeah, Chris, staying on the executive branch, we talked about the pardons from both Biden and Trump, which I think both were appalling. We also talked about executive orders. Aren't we witnessing a perversion of executive power if we have all of these executive orders that are so ephemeral? They have no staying power. They don't have the heft of the Constitution that laws passed by Congress have. And so what we get then is this ping pong of presidents issuing executive orders that make their voting base happy, but then get reversed in 4 years.
Oh, I think so. Yes. I mean, perversion of the presidential executive order, it should be should have bipartisan condemnation, because there is no question that this is not how this was supposed to go. Now, I will note, Bill Clinton pardoned people, including Mark Rich, that were very controversial. George W. Bush pardoned people that were very controversial, but we didn't see the kind of all-out pardons, and certainly not at the start of a presidential term. This is usually the kind of thing that's right at the end, as Joe Biden did. But yeah, what is unfortunate to me is that our politics have become so polarized that we can't just say, you know what, both Joe Biden's use of the pardon power and Donald Trump's use of the pardon power are clearly a distortion of what the founding fathers wanted that to be. And is there a way, short of amending the Constitution, is there a way that Congress could limit that power? And you know what, unfortunately, I don't think that's a conversation we're going to have, because when Donald Trump uses the pardon power or executive orders, Republicans applaud. And when Joe Biden does it, lots and lots of Democrats applaud. And if the shoe was on the other foot, they would be condemning and condemning and condemning. And unfortunately, I think that's just a recognition of where our politics is at the moment.
As you mentioned, Chris, Donald Trump ran on immigration. It was one of the pillars of his campaign. And in this first week, he has really mobilized ICE to to start to find people to have mm-hmm. them deported. Multiple flights have left the country, sending people back to their countries of origin. What do you make of his immigration policy, at least what we've seen so far?
Well, I mean, I will say, and I reminded all of my Democratic friends during the election, that a majority of the public supported the forced ex-migration of people who were here illegally. Not a majority of Republicans, a majority of the country. So in a lot of ways, he's doing what he said he would do. And I always remind people, Donald Trump during the 2024 campaign did not exactly hide the ball on immigration or anything else. Right? I mean, he was very clear on what he would do if he was elected. And he not only won all seven swing states, but he also won the popular vote. So I struggle. I think you can disagree with the policies and with the kind of hard line approach he's taken. But it's very hard for me to be shocked or surprised by it, because I do think, at least in part, that is what people voted for.
It's interesting you say that, because the numbers do show that the majority of the country is in favor. But it depends on how the question is asked. Because if you say something like, well, what if they've been here 10 years? What if they've been working? Mm-hmm. What if they've been paying taxes? What if they have family here? Then that number drops a lot and it becomes an unpopular thing. So if it's done to people who many Americans believe don't deserve it, how do you think that plays in the long run?
Right. Because I think, first of all, a quick point on polling, which is how you ask the question on anything determines the response you're going to get, right? I mean, I think that's a very important point to note, whether it's about a head-to-head question about who do you want to win or a question like immigration. So that's point one. I think that's really a really important point for people to take away. On the second, I think Donald Trump very effectively, because he said it, I read every one of his speeches during the campaign, he said it in every speech. He said, people, the other countries, Venezuela, the Congo, they are sending people from mental institutions. They are sending their criminals over here. Now, I will note, that's never been proven out. There is no evidence that Venezuela's crime rate, which has dropped marginally, is because they're sending criminals. There is no evidence that people are sending, other countries are sending people from mental institutions. But he said it so much that I think when people, when the average American thinks of an undocumented immigrant in this country, they think of a gang member, someone who's doing something bad, someone who shouldn't be here. As you point out, it's much more complicated than that. Many of these people have been here for decades. Many of these people pay taxes, particularly as it relates to birthright citizenship. We're talking about children in many cases who have been born here. What do you do with them? So he has cast it as, well, we're going to throw all the bad people out. And of course, no one is like, yes, let's have a bunch of criminals running around our country who are here illegally. No one supports that. Kamala Harris didn't support it. No one supports that. The issue is, it's more complex than Donald Trump has positioned it on the campaign trail. And when rubber meets road, when we're talking about things like, just for example, his first administration on family separation at the border, well, then what happens then? And we're not there yet, because we're 7 days into his presidency, but I think we will get there.
That is Chris Cillizza, political commentator and author of the daily newsletter, So What? Chris, thank you so much for your time today. We look forward to talking to you on a weekly basis.
Can't wait. I always said, you guys are locked in now. You have to have me, even if I'm terrible on the radio.
Perfect.
You're making this show better.
It's an unbreakable contract.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Nobody can break it.
Yes.
I'm thrilled to be on, and thank you for having me, and I'm excited to talk to you guys each week.
Awesome. That's why we set our standard low, so every guest sounds incredible.
Hell yes, man. We know how to do it.
We know how to make you sound good.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, y'all. Take care. I'll talk to you next week.
Chris Cillizza with us again. His political newsletter, daily newsletter, is called So What? You should subscribe to that. It's Amy Marks-Kors and Chris Ranji. Don't forget that you can ask your smart speaker to play KMOX or play the Chris and Amy show, and it will do it, because it has to do what you tell it to do. This is KMOX.